Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, the crown jewel in public radio's linguistic showcase.
And they wonder why public radio is not for families.
There's one more reason why Big Bird's getting fired.
Let your imaginations run wild. Let the show transport you to new, puzzling destinations.
We're on an island. We don't have anything but these bottle caps.
they grow
which was the only thing we brought from the ship. Who was thinking ahead?
Come spend with us an hour parsing, declining, wandering with words.
Nightcap isn't something you wear or something you drink.
Right, really. Drink.
Well, you start out drinking it and then you end up wearing it.
And share with us your darkest secrets. Confide your deepest thoughts.
I'd like to hear your share fantasy.
I have not.
Says you, anon.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In the Gaza Strip today, explosions. And chaos. That's the sound of emergency workers and others trying to reach a woman trapped in the wreckage of a building hit by an Israeli airstrike. Both sides are trading fire for a fifth day today. A senior Israeli official is reportedly in Cairo today. Egyptian security officials say the envoy has arrived for talks on a ceasefire. Egypt has been leading international efforts to broker a truce. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he is prepared to significantly expand operations against Hamas militants in Gaza, who are continuing to fire rockets into Israeli territory. Israel has temporarily opened a crossing into Gaza, allowing in several truckloads of medical supplies. The BBC's Weira Davis reports from Gaza.
After targeting the Palestinian territory overnight from the air and from warships off the coast, Israel bombed two media buildings in the middle of Gaza City. Eight journalists were injured, but Israel justified the attack because it says Hamas was using antennae on the roofs for communication purposes. In the north of Gaza, two young children were also killed when their house was hit in another airstrike. The militants too stepped up the rocket fire. Hamas's military brigades said they'd fired several long-range missiles towards Tel Aviv and other Israeli cities.
The BBC's Weira Davis reporting there. President Obama is in Thailand at the start of his three-day tour of Asia, but he's keeping an eye on the fighting between Israel and Palestinian militants in the Gaza Strip. At a news conference in Bangkok, he said Israel has a right to defend itself and that the escalation of the conflict deals a blow to Palestinian efforts to establish a state.
The likelihood of us getting back on any kind of peace track that leads to a two-state solution is going to be pushed off way into the future.
President Obama kicked off his Asia tour, declaring the U.S. is and always will be a Pacific nation. NPR's Scott Horsley explains why Southeast Asia is the object of the president's first overseas trip following his reelection.
Thailand is America's oldest diplomatic ally in Asia, with ties dating back nearly 180 years. Mr. Obama says it's no accident he's making his first international trip since winning re-election to this important part of the globe.
As the fastest growing region in the world, the Asia-Pacific will shape so much of our security and prosperity in the century ahead, and it is critical to creating jobs and opportunity for the American people.
Mr. Obama will take part in a regional summit in Cambodia later this week, and he'll make the first ever presidential visit to Myanmar, also known as Burma, to recognize that country's dramatic democratic reforms. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Bangkok, Thailand.
And you're listening to NPR News. In Midland, Texas, federal safety investigators have determined that a parade float filled with wounded veterans began crossing railroad tracks after warning signals went off. The float was hit by a freight train Thursday, killing four veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. The National Transportation Safety Board's Mark Rosekind says the train started sounding its horn 9 seconds before it hit the float, but that doesn't answer all the questions.
When did the engineer actually see the truck? Okay. One of the things we've heard, for example, is how much did the truck actually be able to hear the sounds of the warning, for example. You know, there was a lot of activity going on with other noises going on, etc.
Rosekind says tomorrow investigators will try to establish what the train engineer and the driver of the truck might have seen before the collision. One of the last U.S. House races in the country to be decided has been wrapped up, and Democrat Ron Barber has declared victory in southern Arizona. Arizona Public Media's Andrea Kelly reports.
Barber was elected in June to serve the remainder of Congresswoman Gabrielle Gifford's term in office. She resigned early this year to recover from a gunshot wound to the head she suffered in an assassination attempt in 2011. Barber will now serve a full two-year term in Congress. His margin of victory is only a few tenths of a percent, so he will represent a divided district. He says Congress has a similar challenge.
We have many important decisions to make. We have to find compromise, and we have to find bipartisanship. That's the only way we're going to get this job done.
Barber was Gifford's chief of staff and was also wounded in the shooting. He beat Republican Martha McSally, a retired Air Force colonel and the first female to fly in combat. For NPR News, I'm Andrea Kelly in Tucson.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, celebrating National Adoption Month and promoting lifelong families for all children at AECF.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in West Hartford, Connecticut comes from the good folks at Connecticut Public Radio and the University of Hartford, offering graduate and undergraduate programs in seven distinct colleges, on the web at hartford.edu.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of the Millard Theater on the campus of the University of Hartford, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. His dazzling intellectual footwork always delivers some knockout wit, Barry Nolan. Her good-natured jabs and straight talking always prove a winning combination, Garland Waller. And first he hooks you in with his sense of fun, then clinches your heart with his smile, Mr. Tony Khan. And who will captain this evening?
Oh, Barry. Barry, will you?
Barry.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
We'll be the captain. To my left, Team 2. She's a down-to-earth, no-nonsense intellect, but she's slightly off-center right now. Carolyn Faye Fox. His grounded and disciplined thinking today frays oh so slightly on the edge. Murray Horowitz. So her lightning-quick, rapier-like humor had just better carry the day, Miss Lenore Shannon. And who's going to step up?
The rapier-like.
The wit.
Right.
Miss Shannon.
Yes. My personal Sharpie.
Well, Captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Says You Hall of Famer John Henderson of Lodi, New York. Hi, does everybody say hi, John?
Hey, John.
Hi, John.
He listens to WRVO in Syracuse, Oswego, New York. He herein reenters the fray with a round of What's the Difference? Carolyn, what's the difference between simple and easy?
The difference between simple and easy. Yes. Simple is just something that's very straightforward, uncomplicated. Easy is something that can be sort of complicated, but is easy to do. To inhale and exhale is really
not difficult.
Not difficult.
Is one more mental and the other is more physical?
No, I think you're 9 points. You're pretty much, in fact, you know what, Carolyn? 10 points.
All right.
Nice job. Because easy suggests no trace of effort, not being hard-pressed without difficulty or pain. Simple is free from elaboration, detail,
and
artificiality.
Hard. Yeah, and hard.
It is simple to lift an anvil up onto a high table. It is not easy.
Right.
Excellent. Right. Nicely done.
Right.
All right, try this one, Tony. What's the difference between frolic and cavort?
Frolic and cavort. Probably three or four elves.
That's right.
Frolic and cavort. My gosh. Frolic seems to perhaps be a little bit more innocent and more dance-based and more physical, whereas cavort has perhaps a dark agenda at the end of the evening. Cavort for now, but...
I believe you could frolic by yourself.
but can't self-cavort.
Yes.
Good enough for me, 10 points, that's fine.
I think one of them's catered.
One of them is catered, that's true.
If you get the high-class cavorters.
Yeah, it is. Both are to make merry and be playful. They're both about being frisky, but cavort, perhaps because it was originally applied to a horse, implies horseplay, therefore going beyond the bounds of propriety. Frolic, as Tony so eloquently said, implies an innocence or simplicity, and that's why you got the 10 points.
Oh, I was wondering where we got the 10 points. I wasn't going to say anything.
That was the 10 points.
Thank you.
Murray, what's the difference between a memoir and an autobiography?
I can't remember anything except my autobiography. A memoir is just that, a series of reminiscences and remembrances, whereas an autobiography is telling the story of one's life.
Which, of course, requires...
A section of footnotes.
Fact.
A lot of lying.
Fact.
A lot of lying.
And a caterer.
Yes, no, you're exactly right. It does require research, dates, facts, everything double-checked.
Thank you.
Gore Vidal answered it this way. A memoir is how one remembers one's own life, while an autobiography is history, requiring research, dates, facts, double-checked. Yeah. Try this one, Garland. What's the difference between fear and dread? Ooh. We got an ooh.
Well, it's all rushing back.
Dread in the car on the way down here. You now have fear that you won't answer this right.
Yes.
Well, fear.
I feared
dread.
My wedding night. My wife dreaded it.
Well,
right. It's knowing. Fear can be a direct response to something which is frightening. Dread is an anticipation based upon knowing exactly what it is you're going to be afraid of.
Well, almost. Not quite. No, that's...
Anticipation. Future? Okay.
You got half of it. You're certainly 6 points there, but what do you think of this side?
Fear is present and dread is in the future.
Dread is something you know is going to be bad. You know it's something you hate to do, so you dread doing it. Because you know it's going to be bad. Fear is just, you're afraid, you don't know how it's going to turn out.
Well, dread can be a generalized sort of anxiety, too.
Think of the colonoscopy.
Yes.
You can simply feel...
You've got me.
So that's dread.
You can dread the procedure, but fear things that might go wrong.
You know what? The colonoscopy got me. I'm going to give you the 10 points. I'm ashamed of myself, but not really. Fear has an object and is usually based on a good reason. That's what you originally said. It is manageable. Dread is more intense and implies a feeling that is irrational, almost without cause, and cannot be controlled. That's what dread is. So, they got the 10 points.
I think fear could be irrational.
Fear can be irrational.
But not necessarily, not implicitly. Mm.
Well, that's what we got from the dictionary, and I'm sure the Daily Dispatch will now light up. Tell us what you think the difference is between fear and dread. And, Lenore, what is the difference between poking and prodding.
Well, we're back to the colonoscopy.
One's a misdemeanor.
One's a misdemeanor.
So you poke with your finger
I knew
and
it.
You prod with an object.
That's right.
You prod with an object.
Well, the prod
no,
is to coax.
Prod with
to
your
prod
finger.
Is to coax, whereas to, what to, was the other one?
To poke.
To poke, you can poke in the eye, you can poke, you can injure, hurt somebody with that, but to prod is meant to urge somebody or something on.
Well,
you know something? 10 points.
Good.
Nice job, Murray.
Thank you.
Poking is meant to attract one's attention. Instructions to follow. Prodding is meant to give initial direction and impetus to previously decided upon
and
action.
Tell the folks that at Facebook.
And finally, Barry, what's the difference, and boy, am I going to get mail on this one, what's the difference between wheedle and cajole?
They're both partners in the same law firm.
Yes.
Right?
Wheedle suggests a certain peevishness and small-mindedness. Cajole and suggests an element of flattery and good-natured encouragement.
You are certainly halfway there, because to cajole is to persuade someone, and it is done by sustained coaxing or flattery. That is cajoling. But can you give Wheedle another shot? Because I couldn't believe this when I read it.
Wheedle is to try and strike a better, more favorable deal by constant hectoring.
You know what? Just because I don't quite agree with this, I'm going to give you the 10 points. Listen to this. They say to wheedle is to employ endearments to persuade someone. Give a little, get a little is wheedling. Do you agree with that, audience?
No.
This audience does not agree with that. But that's straight from Webster. So, once again, the Daily Dispatch will light up. And tell us the difference. Tell us what you think wheedle actually means, to employ endearments. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from the Wind Octet at the Hart School at the University of Hartford. It's the first of the Says You bluffing rounds. Lenore, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Barry's team. 10 points are up for grabs. To Barry, if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Lenore, if he can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Clegg. C-L-E-G. Clegg. Folks? There are so many ways to enjoy Says You. You can listen each week, as we hope you do. You can download a show if you miss it. You can attend a live performance, like our upcoming shows in Syracuse, New York, or Boston. And now, there's the book, Says Us, The Scripts and Quips of Says You, Volumes 1 and 2, now available for gifts, for traveling, for holding open the back screen door for the dog. Information about all these items is available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. We hope you'll take a look. Join the fun. Shop till you drop. It's all things Says You at saysyou.net. Says You returns after this from home.
When is Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That is the Wind Octet from the Hart School at the University of Hartford. Thank you very much, folks. Can you all just tell us your names once again, starting there?
Elizabeth Brunbauer.
Lin Jing-Yan.
Dorian Antifa.
Skylar Jackson.
Catherine Cummings.
Emily Crompton.
Brian Nekoloff.
Alexander Colias.
That's the Wind Octet. Thank you very much, folks. We've had a protest. We've had a protest from the scorekeeper.
About the autobiography one.
And what's your protest?
Well, an autobiography has to be about the person who wrote it. And a memoir, I could be writing about your memoirs.
10 points to the scorekeeper. What do you think? We have had a few moments with the word Clegg. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
A memoir written by one's pet. No. A Clegg is a clog that extends up to the knee. No.
Nothing yet.
Not that one either. A Clegg is a drunken argument that culminates in fisticuffs.
A drunken argument, fight breaks out, you got a Clegg on your hands.
So Scottish derivation.
Scottish derivation, no doubt.
Often happens at a Clegg party.
Yeah.
A Clegger.
Right.
It could be that, or it could be something else. Murray?
Well, when my son Alexander was a student at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut... Heaven forbid I should ingratiate myself with the audience, but we had to come up early before the school year, and so it was still the summer, still quite warm. Maybe it was the proximity to the Connecticut River, but there were these huge insects. And this old sort of Connecticut salt said, "Ah, those are your clags. These are large flies found in rural areas, like, you know." Big flies. Horse flies.
Large flies found in rural areas are clegs.
Right.
Lenore, what's your take?
Interestingly, with all these wonderful instruments behind us, a clegg is an instrument. It's a percussion instrument, and it is made from bottle caps that are nailed to a pole, and then they kind of wiggle, and then you... rub another stick on it, and it makes a sort of a jangly sound from people that wanted to make music and maybe didn't have access to bassoons.
You take enough caps off enough beer bottles, you'll want to make music. Believe you me.
A percussion instrument made of bottle caps could be a clegg, or a clegg could be large flies found in rural areas. Or it could be a drunken argument that breaks out in a fight. It is one of those three things, and the choice, Barry, is yours.
Great.
What do you think, team?
I think it's the third, mostly because of the embroidery that they put on the other two, like fisticuffs, and then in rural areas.
Yes.
That's all I've got.
I actually thought it was Lenore's as well. I think there's something, it strikes me as a clegg could be an instrument.
And I've always thought that if I couldn't buy a bassoon, the first thing I'd do...
I'll go with you. I was thinking of maybe on an island, you know, like...
We're on an island, we don't have anything but these bottle caps.
they grow on trees.
Which was the only thing we brought from the ship. Who was thinking ahead?
We don't travel much.
What's the difference? Let's go with Lenore and the bottle caps.
Lenore, they're going to go with you and the bottle caps, believe it or not. Is that, in fact, what a Clegg is?
Please fake a definition.
Hey, as you did. Okay, audience, it's your turn. What do you think? How many say Clegg is a drunken argument that breaks out in a fight? How many say a Clegg is a large fly found in a rural area? Carolyn? Carolyn, I think it's you. I think this audience thinks that a Clegg is a drunken argument that breaks out in a fight. Is that in fact what it is?
It's a memoir written by your pet. No. Clegg, please fake a definition.
It is not. Once again, we have buffaloed them.
Clegg, the horsefly.
10 points.
Which is a word I use.
For Lenore's team. Let's go on to round three. What would Says You be without a round of Odd Man Out?
Probably a successful radio
program. That's probably true. Which of the following does not belong in the list? 5 points for the correct answer. 5 more for telling me why. Carolyn, pull, P-U-L-L, down, D-O-W-N, bell, B-E-L-L, and struck. S-T-R-U-C-K. Pull, down, bell, and struck. What's the odd one out?
Door, pull, doorbell, door struck?
Door down.
So down would be the odd man out? Door pull. Pull over?
No.
Do you have it, Tony?
I think so.
Struck dead? Down dead. Bell dead.
A bellman? A pullman?
Ah.
No, that's it.
No, a struckman?
No.
I got bad news for you. Tony got it.
Oh, wait, it's a star struck. Something struck.
Oh, I don't think they're going to get it. I know the other side has it.
Doorbell, no.
Dumb struck.
I'm feeling that.
Dumb.
Dumb down something. Dumb struck.
Dumbbell, yeah.
Dumbbell, right.
10 points, that's exactly right. Oh, wait a minute. What's the odd one out?
Pull
is the odd one out. There is no dumb pull that I could think of. There is, you can dumb down, you have a dumbbell, and you can be dumb struck. But the odd one out is pull. Very good, you guys. Try this one. Try this one, Tony. What's the odd one out? Charlie Chaplin. Lou Costello. Patrick McNee. And Harrison Ford.
Well, I'd say Lou Costello.
Why would you say that?
Because the other three have very famous scenes in the movies with balls or ball-like objects. Charlie Chaplin in The Great Dictator Planet Earth. Patrick McNee with this bizarre globular object that's chasing him all over the place in The Stranger.
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford is being chased by this rolling...
You have Patrick McNee confused.
Oh.
You have that. You have him confused with someone else.
That's Patrick McAnkle.
Yes.
Never mind. Never mind.
It's Patrick McClegg.
So I guess it must not be Patrick or Lou Costello.
You really have it on
He's
the other
side?
We got it.
He's got it, yeah.
Can we get a hint?
Patrick McNee, I think his most famous role was television.
Yes.
Well, I would say 60s television made him...
So is he the prisoner?
Not the prisoner, no.
That's not the Patrick McGoohan.
Yeah, prisoner, yeah.
That's the other one.
The other one. Oh, was he the two people that were English and...
Emma.
Yes,
and
okay.
And they were the...
Oh, the Avengers.
The Avengers.
Yes.
So that's they were the Avengers.
Was.
Right.
It has to do with partners.
No, it does not.
No, we're ready.
The other side does know. He may have to go there quickly.
They all made their reputation first on... No, they didn't on television.
No?
Because Lou Costello was radio.
I think... I have to go to the other side. What is it, other side?
Harrison Ford, wearing some sort of fedora, I guess, is the odd man out. The others wore derbies.
No, they were bowlers, but you're exactly right. Very good, Murray.
Now, wait, next time you have what's the difference? Well, you know, what's the difference between a derby and a bowler? Can you explain that one?
That's very good. Charlie Chaplin, Lou Costello, and Patrick McNee from the Avengers were all famous for wearing bowlers. Harrison Ford, his most famous character, wore a fedora.
Right.
So that's how arcane that one was. And now I'm going to try this one on you. Toughest one of them all, Murray, but give it a shot. What is the odd one out? Donna Reed. Charlize Theron.
Oh, my.
Elizabeth Taylor. Mira Sorvino. And Cher.
Oh, I mean, there are five of them.
Yeah.
Holy Moses. Well, I've had fantasies about all of them.
I'd like to hear your Cher fantasy.
I've not had a Donna Reed fantasy since I was 10.
Yeah.
Wowee.
I would guess Donna Reed's the only one who did not have plastic surgery.
I just don't even want to go there.
What's amazing is you're so right you didn't get a laugh. You
know, yeah, that's right.
Like, yeah, right. Okay, let's get to work here.
All right.
Elizabeth Taylor.
I can add one more that would help, I think.
Yeah, do it.
To Donna Reed, Charlize Theron, Elizabeth Taylor, Mira Sorvino, Jane Fonda, and Cher.
Charlize Theron, Donna Reed. Let's look at Oscar winners. Mira Sorvino, Charlize Theron, Liz Taylor, Cher, Jane Fonda. Donna Reed. No, she won. She won. And she won for Best Supporting. Charlize Theron. Everybody else won for Best Actress. Donna Reed was Best Supporting.
No, Mira Sorvino was also Best Supporting.
Holy Moses.
Wait a minute. So Charlize Theron played the serial killer. Cher in Moonstruck played sort of an undesirable woman.
No. You're right to think about the roles.
Liz Taylor is a call girl. Mira Sorvino is a call girl. Donna Reed was the only one who wasn't a prostitute.
No, she was.
She was a prostitute. Okay, then Cher. Cher is the odd. Cher was not.
The only one who was not a woman of the evening is, in fact, Cher.
Cher.
That is right. We kind of dragged it out of you there.
So to speak.
Yes, so we'll give you 7 points for that, and I think that's fair.
Oh, clearly you've never heard Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Yeah. All but Cher won Oscars playing women of ill repute. Donna Reed in From Here to Eternity, Charlize Theron in Monster, Elizabeth Taylor for Butterfield 8, Jane Fonda for Clute, and Mira Sorvino, of course, for Mighty Aphrodite. Very good. Try this one, Garland. What's the odd one out? Fly, hop, H-O-P, chord, C-H-O-R-D, and note. Fly, hop, chord, and note.
Oh.
Do you have it?
Anything to do with
blue?
Is there paper? Is there anything with paper?
No, that's not it.
Hop paper.
But again, you're right to try and do it this way.
Is it a word that goes in front or behind?
It is a word that goes in front. I'll give you that clue.
Bar
is correct. We gave them a hint too, so give them 8 points for that. It is bar fly, bar hop, bar chord, but there was no bar note that we could think of. Try this one, Lenore. The Changing Man.
The Changing Man?
Yes. Aged in wood.
Aged in wood.
The Dueling Cavalier.
Cavalier.
And Anti-Mame.
Anti-Mame.
The Changing
Man. They're
all
the names of scotch or booze
or
wine.
Nothing.
I'm going to guess that Anti-Mame is the odd one out.
Anti-Mame is the odd one out.
Because the other three are fictitious motion pictures.
Why are they fictitious?
Because they appear in other motion pictures.
10 points.
Wow.
Nicely done.
What?
You want to give it a shot where they appear?
Dueling Cavalier appears in Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Film within a film.
Aged in Wood. Anybody know? Appears
Ed
in
Wood.
All About Eve.
No. All About Eve is aged
The Changing Man, you should know, actually. That's in Zelig. But anti-MAME, the others are plays within a play. MAME contains a play, The Man in the Moon. So that's what it
is. Wow, great question.
And finally, Barry, try this one. What is the odd one out? Peggy. Sonia, S-O-N-I-A. Dawn. And River.
They're all dishwashing detergents.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Peggy, Sonia, Dawn, and River. Don't say it out loud. Anybody got this?
So this is another one of those things where there's a word that goes at the end of this.
Well, sort of.
Yeah. Sort of? There's no moon good. Peggy.
Peggy, Sonia, Dawn, and River.
These were the names that Lawrence Welk gave to each of his fingers.
Why not?
Peggy and Sonia were skating champions.
And the one, and the two.
For those of our listeners who are unlike us under the age of 83, Lawrence Welk was an accordion player.
Yes. So are Peggy and Sonia skaters?
They are, but that has nothing to do with this.
Nothing to do with anything.
Let me give you one
Sonia Henny, that's right.
Yes, let me give you one small clue here.
Yeah?
Dawn and River are both capitalized.
Dawn. Oh! Capitalized!
Yes, sir.
So they're names.
They're parts of names, yeah.
They're parts of names. So,
you know, maybe each of them has a second word and the words are related by some kind of category. In other words, it's not the same word, but it's like each one has a color attached to it. Or,
ooh.
Good thought.
Like Rosy Finger Dawn, Peggy
We're
Sue.
We're always with the fingers.
Sonia. You know, he's a lot closer than you want to admit. He's
Riverquai, Dawn Patrol.
Anyone in the audience?
It wasn't that interesting.
Red is exactly right.
I was thinking Dawn.
Very, because you have Red. So the odd man out, of course, is Peggy. There is a movie called Red Dawn. There's a movie called Red River. There's a movie called Red Sonia.
Yes.
But I could not find a movie named Red Peggy anywhere I looked. So that is it. 10 points for the audience. Nice job. And thus ends a very tough round of Odd Man Out. Good, that's good sports, you guys. Thanks for playing that round. And let's go on to round four, which is Barry's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Lenore, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word nunu. N-U.
And don't go you. There. Don't go there, Tony.
No, no. Folks. Just a quick reminder, tickets, information, and details for all SezU tapings are available at SezU.net. And this holiday season, we're proud to announce the publication of our second book, Says Us, The Scripts and Quips of Says You, Volume 2. It's the consummate travel companion, a thoughtful gift. Everything to make the winter shorter and more fun at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. Briefly, Says You pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. The Wind Octet from the Hart School at the University of Hartford. Thanks, folks. We've had a little time with the word nunu. We will go first to Tony Khan.
Well, you'd think it would be what any respectable Hawaiian would wear under her hula skirt. But no. It is actually Hawaiian. It is a Hawaiian nightcap made out of fermented breadfruit.
Breadfruit.
Fermented breadfruit?
Nightcap as in something you wear or something you drink?
Right, really.
Drink.
Well, you start out drinking it, and then you end up wearing it.
I see you've been familiar with the nunu.
Nunu.
Go ferment the breadfruit. You got nunu. That's what it could be. Or it could be something else. Garland?
Well, my daughter is taking a class right now in something called Distant Worlds.
And I studied that in college.
Well, this means it's sort of related to the Big Bang Theory. It's the early chaos that formed the world and created the world.
Oh.
So that's what's the definition?
Is? Mm-hmm. The Nunu. Early chaos that formed the world.
Yes.
Okay, could be. Or it could be something else. Barry?
Tony was right on about the Hawaii connection. Nunu is a coconut-based dessert. You may recall that there was a famous line in the classic movie, Mae West Does Hawaii, in which she says to our hero, "Think that all that happens tonight is dinner and a movie? Nunu."
Because of that coconut-based dessert. It could be that. It could be the early chaos that formed the world, or it could be the Hawaiian nightcap fermented out of breadfruit, something like that. It's one of those three, and the choice, Lenore, is yours.
A nightcap made of fermented... I've heard Tony go to that well before, that kind of crazy... Wasn't there something about a...
Yak milk?
Yak milk, that's what it was. It was yak milk.
Oops.
No, but Tony always throws in a twist. As I recall, it was male yak milk.
The early chaos that formed the world...
I think it was called chaos.
Yeah, there wasn't much of anything.
What do you think?
I would go for the... How do we feel about the dessert?
I don't think so.
Really?
It's very nonspecific. I've never heard of a coconut-based dessert called a nunu. I mean, unless Barry wants to get more specific about what kind of dessert it is.
What does the card say, Barry?
A specific coconut dessert. That's a particular coconut dessert.
That's not doing it for me.
Particular?
I feel hopelessly ignorant. I mean, name three Hawaiian desserts, you know? Quick.
You know.
Nunu, and onu.
The forgotten bread.
And then there's neo-nunu.
Neo-nunu.
The bread, but then we've got...
Hawaiian
we've got two
fermented,
Hawaiian. They've gone
fermented.
To Hawaii here twice, which
yeah,
is
which means
of,
it's one of those
one
two.
Of,
I think
one
it's one of
those two.
Then I'd go with Tony.
You would?
I would.
I would too.
I would
After
absolutely go
everything
with,
that she put me through.
Yeah. I would go with you and your nunu.
But feel free to.
I feel like being a good captain, I should probably make my own decision and the heck with you two. No, that's terrible.
Show some leadership.
Let's go with Barry.
Barry, Lenore has finally come to the decision.
Might be wrong. Already feel wrong.
That a nunu, that nunu is
feeling
a
feeling contrite now.
Is that your penultimate answer?
Eating Altoids. Maybe I've ruined it for everyone.
Yeah.
Lenore has come to the conclusion that Nunu is a coconut-based dessert.
Oh, she's just a girl who can't say
Lenore
Nunu.
Has ruined it for everyone. Please fake a definition.
That was a bluff.
Not necessary.
Okay, audience. Your turn. What do you think? Is Nunu a Hawaiian nightcap from fermented breadfruit? Or is Nunu the early chaos that formed the world? Wow. That is awfully close. I really can't tell, but someone up there was telling the truth. Who was it?
No.
Nunu. Early chaos that formed the world.
We're all wrong.
The early chaos that formed the world. 10 points. This week's request for a spotlight round comes from Alex Lester of Newcastle upon Tyne, England. Alex writes, I hear your show on the internet and love it. I remember a moment from long ago when Richard quoted a poem, something about a mournful bird watcher. I can't remember if it was part of the game or just something someone said, but I really liked it, would like to hear it again. Can that be a spotlight round? Well, Alex, this was a tough one to find, but find it we did. From season 5, a round of Says Who. From the clues provided, please tell me who is responsible for the following bon mot. Carolyn,
yes.
The
again?
Fells Point philosopher who wrote, conscience is the inner voice which warns us somebody may be looking.
Arnie, you should know this one.
The what?
What's Fells Point?
What's Fells Point?
Ooh.
Oh, my goodness. We don't know
I know
this
that
one.
That's key, and I don't.
Yeah.
Fells Point.
Fells
Point.
Oh, Mencken.
It is, in fact, H.L. Mencken.
Yeah,
when in doubt.
Fells Point. I had to go through the map of around Baltimore until I figured out Fells Point.
Yeah, right. We'll give them 8 points for his trip around Baltimore.
Thank you.
H.L. Mencken, conscience is the inner voice which warns us somebody may be looking.
All right, well,
Tony,
yeah.
Although attributed to many, it was this Hollywood movie mogul who first said, anyone who goes to a psychiatrist ought to have his head examined.
Well,
that sounds like a Goldwinism.
It is, in fact, Samuel Goldwyn. Yeah. That's exactly right. Very good, 10 points.
Manny Hollywood.
Also famous for saying, count me out. I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, he said.
But Mr. Goldwyn did say a verbal agreement's not worth the paper it's printed on.
Yes, he did say that. Arnie, since you knew that, try this. From Round Table to Brown Derby, this writer-actor was famous for devising and then delivering lines like, why don't you slip out of those wet clothes and into a dry martini? Oh,
Robert Benchley.
Oh, my goodness. Robert Benchley is exactly right.
Good.
You wouldn't happen to know the movie, would you?
The movie. Gosh. No, I don't.
It's The Major and the Minor, 1942 classic.
Oh, boy.
Francine, probably no one could have better expressed the sentiment, between two evils, I always pick the one I haven't tried before.
Sounds like Mae West to me.
Sounds like Mae West to everybody. Very good. 10 points.
I was hoping to get Mae myself.
Paula, the columnist who wrote of the president besieged by Watergate, I worship the quicksand he walks in.
Would that be Russell Page?
The columnist who wrote of the president besieged by Watergate, I worship the quicksand he walks in. Thoughts? You got to have a thought there.
Well, we're only going to be guessing here. Let's just run through the columnists of the era.
Well, I thought it might. Well,
was
no,
Nicholas von Hoffman writing the Washington
not.
Post then? He
I.
was always
Stone.
Pretty funny. I.F. Stone, no.
Any help from the other son?
Buckwald.
Art
no?
Buckwald.
Bart
a gentleman
Buckwald?
Who has sat
oh,
in
yes.
the seat that you're now sitting
oh,
in.
Art
yes,
Buckwald.
Art Buckwald.
Of course.
Former panel, former Says You panelist.
No, I've been here a while to think of that.
Said that. Very good. From the other side. And finally, Barry, the master of rhyme and rhythm who penned, I believe a little incompatibility is the spice of life, particularly if he has the income and she's patable.
And she's
patable.
It's got Barry.
Yeah. This... Ogden Nash?
Ogden Nash.
Tony.
Just,
Ogden
Nash have I ever done Confessions of a Nuthatch Avoider?
Observer, right?
What?
Have I ever done
what?
That? The last four lines.
The last four lines
he bemoans not being a bird watcher, and the last four lines of which are, that is why I sit here growing old by inches, watching the clock instead of finches, but I often visualize in my gin the Audubon that I ought to been. I'll have to do that one someday.
That's great.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite.
You can register your choice at sayu.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's close tonight. Originally suggested by listener Billy Conrad of San Francisco, California. Thanks, Billy. Let's try another round of missing persons. I'll give you the first name of one famous person and the last name of another famous person. In order to identify both of them, you must identify the missing person embedded between. Let me give you an example. If I gave you the name Martha Berlin, mm-hmm. you would have to say Martha Irving. Washington,
Irving.
Washington Irving, oh, Irving Lord. Berlin. The missing person is Washington Irving. Huh. Try this one, Carolyn. John Minow.
Newton. Got to be Newton Minow. That's the only...
Newton Minow is correct.
John,
you're halfway there.
Johnny Appleseed. Is there an Apple Newton?
No.
Yeah, you see, there's just not enough Vegas in these people.
No, I was thinking of Fandy Newton.
Oh, I think I gave that away to half
yes,
of you.
What? We didn't hear.
The clue I gave you was there's not enough Vegas in you people.
Oh, Wayne. John Wayne Newton. Thank you.
John Wayne Newton. Right. Yes. Yeah. Wayne Newton is the missing person. John Wayne, Wayne Newton, Newton Minow.
Okay. Right.
Newton B. Minow. How many people remember Newton B. Minow? Yes, three of you. Thank you very much.
John Newton Minow was the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission under President Kennedy,
yes.
and he's the one who described television as, quote, a vast wasteland.
Ooh,
yes,
quote.
He did.
And that's the reason we're all working in radio.
And he changed his mind halfway through, and he said it was a half-vast wasteland.
Yes. Try this one, Tony. Howard Milner.
Milner?
What's the missing name? Howard Milner.
Not a clue.
Not a clue. Neither one of those names?
No, Milner.
Oh, I thought Milner might give it to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Howard De Silva.
Oh, yeah.
You got it? Boy, yep. This is their day over there, that's for sure. Howard Milner. No
Milner.
Route 66 fans over there, huh?
Well, I'm sorry.
Martin 66. Milner.
Martin Milner?
That's correct.
Okay, Howard Dean Martin Milner.
That is exactly right. Howard Dean Martin Milner. Dean Martin is the missing person, and we gave you a hint there, so we'll give you 5 points for that. Very good. Try this one. Here, we'll give you this one, Murray. Rex Frick.
Rex what?
Frick. F-R-I-C-K.
Ford. Ford Frick, former commissioner of baseball. Ford. We have Gerald. We have Edsel. We have Betty. We have
something that goes with Rex.
Ernie.
No, Rex is what you...
Yeah, we need a term, the first name of somebody
Rex.
Named Ford. Mary Ford.
Rex.
The other side has it.
Wait a minute, wait. Ford.
The audience has it.
Yeah, but so quiet.
Herbert.
Does the band have it?
Herbert.
I go to the other side.
Henry Ford.
Rex Harrison, Harrison Ford.
Ah. Rex Ford Harrison. Great. I can't believe he gets Ford Frick, the former commissioner of baseball, but does not get Harrison Ford,
well,
who was mentioned
be worth something.
You know, several minutes ago.
Do we get any points?
We got half of it.
Yeah, you got Ford Frick. Give him 5 points for that. Try this. Oh, this is horrible. Okay. Try this one, Garland. Buddy Richard.
Something little. Little Richard,
yep,
right?
That's
something.
It. That's
Buddy.
It. You got it.
Buddy.
That's it.
Holly Little.
Buddy Epson.
Yep.
Little.
Easy.
Got it.
Little Richard.
That's right.
So,
Rich Little.
That's exactly right. Buddy Rich. Rich Little is the missing person. And Little Richard, of course. All right, try this. Try this one, Lenore. Mr. Spitzer.
Mr. Spitzer.
Ooh.
That's it?
Oh, Mr. I get it.
Roberts.
So it's Elliot.
Yeah.
And Mr. T.S. Mr. Thomas Stearns Elliot.
Richard would never give me that question.
Oh, yes, I would.
Oh, would you?
That's exactly right, Murray.
Oh, wow.
It is Mr.
T.S.
Elliot Spitzer.
Oh.
Mr. T.S.
Mr. T.S. Elliot.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Hartford Hiss once again comes to the fore. And finally, try this
not
one.
Not many people know it, but Mr. T and T.S. Eliot were very close. And
they were close. They were close.
He stole his most famous poem, I Pity the Fool.
And finally, Barry, try this one. Deborah Dean. I'll give you a hint if you need it.
Deborah Dean.
Yep.
Howard Dean.
No, not Howard
Dean. James Dean.
Yes.
Deborah Blunt James, Henry James, Deborah Henry.
Oh, you're so close.
Deborah, yeah.
Oosh.
Yep. Deborah Harry.
Deborah Harry.
James Dean.
That's exactly right. Deborah Harry. Harry James, James Dean. That was a nice close. It gave you 73 points, but sorry, not enough on a day when Lenore's team was going to score 87 points. Winners this week. Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. I want to thank everyone here at the University of Hartford, especially Christine Zywosinski, Paula Bleck, Michael Bernard, Robert Black, and all the folks here that made this a really nice evening. And all the folks here in the audience who came out, thank you for being here. Sharon Salkin, write the words. Frank Cunningham mans the meters. And Zach Moore is the minister of Etheria. Once every few weeks, we get to remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, Hartford, for showing up. See you next week.
Support for CISU in West Hartford, Connecticut comes from the good folks at Connecticut Public Radio and the University of Hartford, offering graduate and undergraduate programs in 7 distinct colleges on the web at hartford.edu. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
CISU, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
Indian corn, honey, sorghum syrup, sweet potatoes, chrysanthemums. Tennessee's farmers markets are filled with the colors and tastes of fall. Tennessee Department of Agriculture offers a reminder that on the farm, it's time for hay rides and corn mazes, picking apples, and raiding the pumpkin patch. A list of local farms and farmers markets is available online at picktnproducts.org. Find it on a Tennessee farm.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.